Hey, good evening. Thank you so much for coming out. It's a pleasure to be here among friends, brothers and sisters in Christ. Greetings from Grace Bible Church of Solvang. I am one of the 5,000 who actually live and work in the city of Solvang. My wife and I have been there for about a dozen or so years. Been on the Central Coast. Family's been there over 100 years. I always enjoy coming out here. Gives me a chance to warm up. It was about 78 when I left, so thanks for cooling it down a little bit for me. So let me do this. So I attend a number of seminars of various sizes throughout the year, and I give a number throughout the year too. And anytime I'm sitting there, I kind of want an idea of what's going on. So I'm just going to go over a little bit of a roadmap so you can kind of see where we're at in this process. So yeah, let me start off. Grant, thank you for the generous introduction, and thanks for your coordination of making this happen. It's been a real pleasure getting to know you two and your son. Thank you for setting me up here on the AV. And so I'm going to do just a little bit introduction of me. I'll hold off on the Barnabas side probably until later, because we're really breaking this down into two parts. So part one is going to be just kind of basic contours of estate planning generally. So I am licensed here in California. I'm also licensed back in D.C. to practice law. I've been, for the last 18 or so years, I've been focused on estate planning, drafted a whole lot of trusts, whole lot of wills, whole lot of powers of attorney, directives, etc. over the years. And about seven, eight years ago, I pivoted to trying to do over half of my time doing a kingdom work, so churches, wonderful ministries like the Grace Umbrella of Ministries and many others, and just a number of churches. So it's really a privilege and an honor to be with you. So that's going to be part one. I understand we have a couple hours. I hope to not take all the couple hours. I'm guessing some of you, like me, may have some kids at home. You probably got some other obligations. And so I will come at you maybe a little bit fast. I'm going to try not to do the fire hose effect. But let me ask you this. So I will send out the slides. Yeah, I mean, I put the slide deck together, but I'm not sitting on any of this. I really just want to give away everything free. So you've got some information in front of you. That's really going to be more directed at the part two on some of the tax-efficient charitable giving side. But on part one, you know, the slides will go out. I think, Grant, if you have an email address with him, he can send that out, and I'll make myself available as well. I got a lot of business cards. Feel free to call, and we could always follow up. So let's do this. So when I go through, if there's anything you want to chat about, feel free to interrupt me if it's something that may be unique to your situation. You could take it offline. We'll have a break between this part one and two. Take 5-10 minute break, and then we could talk. And I'll make myself available as long as need be afterward as well. So if you have anything you want to come and talk to me about, we'll certainly do that. And then finally, on the Q&A side, anytime throughout, of course, my disclaimer, you get asked me, you're never going to get a bell for me, but we don't have an attorney-client relationship. We do not have an attorney-client relationship. So I'm here really on behalf of really the kingdom work, but also a wonderful Christian foundation that I've been affiliated with for some time. Okay, so let's jump on in. So the importance of planning. Well, I should note, so my little grim reaper here in the library, I just did a generative AI image builder for death and taxes. All right, and that's what it spit out. So that's death and taxes, and that's the world in which I live in and breathe. I'm kind of an undertaker business, but a lot of folks, you know, really don't think about these things. I just grabbed mention until it may be a little late, either through health challenges, diminished capacity, or some other considerations. And that's why I put to that first point. Most Americans will die without a valid estate plan in place. So that number to remember, that 67, that's not just the year of my Pontiac that we were looking at a while ago, but that's also the percentage estimated of Americans and Californians, holds true, that die every year without any plan in place. No will, no trust, no nothing. And that's sad, because that can really, we'll talk about maybe a couple little war stories. I won't spend a lot of time there, but most people won't. There's a number of reasons. We all have them. I think I've heard it all. You know, what do I care? I'm going to be dead. Oh, my kids will, you know, get it up. Well, the lawyers are really expensive. If you think lawyer expenses are on this side of glory, wait till your kids are having to pay them to probate in action on your part. Like I say, this year marks 30 years since I've been in and out of service. I was active Coast Guard, active Air Force. I'm still a reserve JAG with the Air National Guard. And we always talk about, failing to plan is planning to fail. And I think nowhere is that more true than in estate planning. So another number to remember, we'll just go 68, because it's easy to remember coming up from 67, is this what we call the Great Wealth Transfer, a.k.a. Silver Tsunami. There's a whole lot of Americans born between 1940 and 1955. and they're all getting a little bit longer in the tooth. And they are sitting on the largest concentration of wealth in the history of the West, arguably the world. So depending who you talk to, that 68 is trillion, and that's a low side estimate. Other estimates are up northward of 80 trillion. All that is going to be changing hands in the next 12 to 20 years. We have the silver tsunami, I've heard other people call it, the great wealth transfer. I've been hearing about this for 20 years since I got going, because there's a, you know, we have that baby boomer generation, unparalleled peace and prosperity, and it's going somewhere. And if you don't get a little proactive for your families, or those of you sitting out there may have parents in that category, you know, I'd encourage them to really get proactive too, because it's not just a way to take care of family, but it's also a way to take care of ministries. Median gift to kids, and the kind of that, we talk about the silent generation, greatest generation, baby boomer generation, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z. The millennials and the Gen Xers that are set to take bequests from the baby boomers, median bequest is over 800,000, and so there's going to be a lot of resources changing hands, and so it's keeping me and my colleagues extremely busy, and so I'm just we're just doing what we can. On the charitable side, on the kingdom giving side, and I've seen this time and time again, if you want to do a gift out of your estate, that can often dwarf everything you've given during your life. Even a 10% tithe out of your estate, many of you are thinking about it, you're probably worth more than you think. Most of the time I sit down with my clients and we go over the full asset inventory, and then we start talking about, well, do you want to do any kingdom giving? Gifts to Grace Church of Bakersfield, gifts to maybe a ministry that you support, even a 10% gift. We'll talk about some of those giving options, but I've just seen that. In fact, even recently, over at my home church, Grace Bible Church of the San Ynez Valley, there was a gentleman who gave a very significant gift out of the estate, and I'm sure he was my client. It was orders of magnitude beyond what he ever gave during life, fixed income. So there's maybe some of you sitting out there today, and that's why I'm here. And that's my duty to warn. That's really just kind of this Ezekiel, you know, function. And it's not exactly on point, but I always think of myself too, because there's been a lot of folks, and then I have some high worth clients, you know, in the hundreds of millions, and sometimes they just don't want to plan. They're entrepreneurs. They're working on their next deal. They're in their 90s, and they're talking about their next 10-year business plan. And I'm like, no, but we're not planning. We're not planning for the future. I'm not going to think about what's going to happen to my stuff when I'm decomposing in the ground. We need to think about what we're doing next week and the next year. And I said, okay, that's great, but as much as I've tried to cajole and encourage and wrestle people down on this issue, I realize that there's just a number of us that won't plan. Now, you guys are the exception. Congrats, you're here. You have a night. You came toward the fire to be here with me, so you obviously have some motivation, so I appreciate you. But the sad reality is even our brothers and sisters in Christ will just go without planning. And like my poor wife, Sean, has heard many times, it's like, I cannot care about your estate more than you. I will reach out and I will be happy to help, but you've got to lean into this and get this done. So let's talk about if you do nothing. The state of California, even if you're in Nevada now, you think, I'm retiring, I'm going to Nevada. Okay, the state of Nevada, the state of Idaho, wherever you plan, Tennessee, wherever you plan on retiring, they have a plan for you if you do nothing. If you have assets in California, if you're domiciled, ultimately probate in California, Mr. Newsom has a plan for your estate if you do nothing. I'd recommend leaning into this and do it. So it's called the State Laws of Intestate Succession. California laws, we have a probate code, and so it's intestate, meaning without a will. What happens to all your stuff? It's all governed by probate code. Your stuff has to go somewhere, but it's probably not going to go the way you want it if you don't. So your heirs, your kids, or if you don't have kids, the people that are going to take these circles of kinship, they're going to incur some unnecessary taxes, whether it's an income or estate. There is a deceit in income tax. If you have minor kids, I'm seeing a couple younger folks like me. If you're like me, you've got some minor kids at home. The court's going to decide what happens to minor kids if you and spouse happens without your input, and that's sad. I mean, the court's always going to decide if you both happen, they have to approve it. But the overwhelming number of cases that I've been a part of, they're going to approve parental wishes with respect to successor guardian, so long as the successor guardian is willing and able. So if you don't say though, well, now you're leaving it to family, and then the grandparents get involved, and then your friends get involved, and it gets a little ugly. Your medical wishes may not be carried out. You leave people guessing, and it's certainly an unnecessary stress on your family, McGrant alluded to, so thank you. And finally, if you have unclaimed assets, if you're not really thinking about everything within your estate, it's this fancy term called escheat. And all that means is over a period of years, your assets go to the state. So why'd I put the little high-speed rail on there? Well, because it goes to Sacramento. And as much as I'm sure Sacramento would love to have your money so you could get this train zipping through the valley here, I think you'd rather have it go to family or ministries. All right? So hopefully, you're motivated even more so to think about planning, whether you're creating your first plan or updating. All right. So when I say estate, we keep talking about estate planning. What is an estate? Well, you know, it's simply the sum of your assets. This is a Travis definition, but I mean, whether it's the Biltmore estate here, or it's something a little more modest. It's going to include your home. You know, if you're renting, well, it's going to include any other real estate. Timeshare, if there's an estate value, often they're not. They're just governed by contract. It's going to include investment. Maybe you've got the cabin up at Mammoth or Big Bear. It's going to be a tangible personal property. Everything you own, everything inside your house. The shirt on your back, as it were. It's going to be bank accounts, financial institutions, investment accounts, other retirements, your IRAs, your 401ks, TSPs, ESOPs, whatever you got, and as well as business interest, S-Corp, C-Corp, LLC, family partnerships, and intellectual property as well. So everything you own or have some sort of claim of right over, is going to be a part of your estate. Okay? So what's estate planning? Well, it's going to do a number of things, right? When people think estate planning, they often think, oh, that just tells people where I want my stuff to go. Yeah, but it's a little bit more. If you have minor kids, you're going to do guardianship appointment, successor guardianship appointment. It's going to start with your funeral arrangements. You're usually going to specify, if you've already prepaid for a lot, it's going to reference that so at least people know. I had a lot of clients that have prepaid for funeral arrangements. The next of kin don't know about it, and so then that goes unused, and then they end up paying for a lot of funeral expenses out of the estate. It's going to provide for your children's needs. It's going to avoid those unnecessary taxes. It's also going to anticipate your incapacity. And I'll show you just a little graphic I put together in a couple slides. But it's more than just, a will, or in California, we hear about these living trusts, and I'll talk about those in a bit. But it's also going to include some other durable powers of attorney. And those come under a few different flavors. So I'll talk about those. I'm just kind of highlighting. And it's also going to invest in your local church or other kingdom causes. I think a number of us, we're pretty serious about tithing, we're pretty serious about supporting capital campaigns when the church leadership asks, but a lot of us just aren't thinking about, I've modeled stewardship for my kids and was around my entire life, my last will and testament, my living trust, that's going to be my last earthly statement. I want to continue to model some giving as well, and this is a place to do it. So, before you start going in and just saying, okay, where do I want my stuff to go to and is it going to go to? This is my preliminary estate planning consideration slide. So you're going to start thinking about, okay, if you have kids, what needs do they have? How old are they? How are financially responsible? Do you have the kid, or if you've got some in-law, maybe they've married, maybe you've got a son or daughter-in-law, you give them a dollar, they'll spend five. Is there some financial responsibility issues with them? Are they good with money? What needs do they really have? Do you have a business you want to keep going? Do you have some sort of family partnership or some sort of family dynasty desires that you want to keep a business going? And you've already identified a child or two or three to keep that going. And how are we going to do that in the plan? How much do you want to leave each of your kids? And do you want to leave them individually or as a group? And I'll give you some ideas in a couple slides. But this little red line here, you see that red bullet? That is the only bullet I put red. Everything is the little stock blue throughout. Because this little red bullet here has been the topic of so much conversation for Travis over 20 years, because I learned early on that at some point, and it's different for the individual and it's different for the client and the donor, there's going too much to a child can hurt more than help. I'll say that again. Too much to a child can hurt more than help. Now, there may be a different point. And again, financial responsibility, age, special needs, are there substance abuse issues, are there mental health? I mean, what's the capacity issues? But there is a point. And maybe it's hundreds of millions. I mean, I've got clients worth north of a billion, and they're leaving their kids $100 million because they're doing half of it to ministry. That's awesome. But, maybe for some folks, it's like, no, I'm not leaving. They're going to get $1,000 each. Okay, well, let's talk about appropriate amounts. Fire.
Yeah.
Do you have a beneficiary who's a missing or endangered adult? who might not be financially responsible as well. All right, so there is some, and that's why. So this is obviously a guy with a handful of cash in front of a casino. Do you have somebody that if you give them a nice gift, they're just going to take it to the local tribe or over the hill to Vegas? And it's charitable giving, an important part of your legacy. We already touched on that. We'll talk a little more. All right, so let's get into the weeds just a little bit as soon as we close these out. Okay. So we talked about a well a little bit. What's a well? I think we all have some familiarity with the well. Pretty straightforward. Last will and testament. Starts with funeral arrangements. It talks about guardianship issues if you have minor kids or special needs children or wards. And it's also going to give a distribution for your probate assets. So here's the deal. The probate assets, though, really isn't all of your estate when you think about it, right? So you think, hey, I've got my last will and testament. I'm leaving it to my kids in equal shares and where everything's taken care of. Well, what does the will actually govern? It's only going to govern the things that are under, right? So you may have your real property, if you haven't done anything else to put it in trust or some other legal vehicle. It's going to govern, it may govern your tangible personal property, it probably will. It may govern your vehicles if you don't have some sort of disjunctive ownership on title where you have somebody else on your title. But it's not going to govern most things that pass by beneficiary designation. If you have your IRA or 401k or some other employer-sponsored plan, usually they're required you're going to get a beneficiary designation on it. So are those beneficiary designations up to date? Life insurance proceeds. Now, I'm sure a lot of you, like me, you go and you open these various accounts, investment accounts, checking, saving, whatever you got, and they make you put beneficiary designations as well because they don't want to deal with executors and probate process. So those come under the flavor. So now you hear a lot about POD and TOD, payable on death, transfer on death. Probably a lot of you probably even have them. A lot of people try to avoid, you know, going with the will, and they're just going to try to line everything up on beneficiary designations. Wouldn't recommend it, but that's what we're talking about, a will. Very basic document, and it does the job. It's going to take everything that doesn't pass by beneficiary designation. It's going to be a probate asset. Kick it out to the people you specify. So why don't we use them in California very much? Because you got to go through probate. And if any of you have a lot of experience in the California Superior Court system, that's usually not a cheap or quick experience. And so we try to do some things to get around the probate process. So we get assets to ministry. We get assets to kids. We get assets out quickly and maybe a little less expensive. All right, which brings us to trusts. And there's one kind of trust that most people use for planning, but I just want to be clear when we're talking about trust. A trust is really just a legal entity that holds assets. I mean, here's one formal definition. But when I'm talking about trust, it's really just it's a vehicle that's going to hold assets. So yeah, you got a fiduciary, you're going to have a settlor, grantor, trustor, and then you've got your trustee and successor trustee, and then you're going to have your named beneficiaries. But what are we really talking about? It's a legal entity, kind of a basket that holds assets, stuff. It could be real property. It could be liquid assets. It could be your crypto exchange. I mean, it just holds stuff. And it's going to, there's many, many, many types of trust. So oftentimes people say, oh yeah, I got my trust taken care of. Well, there are so many types of trust out there. One is a probate avoidance. We talk about a revocable inter vivos trust, a living trust. That's the most common. We're talking about estate planning. But you may hear things like Nings and Dings, you know, the Nevada, you're looking at incomplete gift, non-grantor trust to avoid California taxes so they can draw down your decedents. You may have SLAT, spousal lifetime access trust. You could have your credit shelter trust. You could have survivor and decedent trust. There's so many different types of trust out there. I think I've got templates in my office for over 60 different types. Okay, so there's a lot of trusts. And so sometimes you'll hear people getting cavalier, just throwing around, oh, I got a trust, I got it taken care of. Well, we usually on a more complex estate package, I could include a dozen or more trusts. Qualified domestic operating trust, Q-tip with a provision at the end. So there's so many types of trust. But what I'm going to talk about really exceeds what we can do here today, unless we want to spend a semester and get 3 units of law credit. What I'm really talking about today is the living trust. And this goes under a bunch of different names. This is a revocable inter vivos trust, which is just, yeah, it's a revocable inter vivos because it's done in your life. It's revocable or revocable because you could revoke it up until the point of your incapacity or death. And it's a And the joint is usually a joint revocable inter vivos for married couples because they can use it as one. Whereas your last will and testament, husband and wife each do their own, often their mirror image, especially if you have guardianship. If you're doing this living trust, it's usually going to be a joint revocable. All right, so husband, wife, just doing one. Okay, makes the estate process a little simpler, a little easier, and it's a little more private. You know, the probate process is public record, which is why it's fun, because every time somebody with name recognition dies in California, you know, then they get all their stuff. Everything's going to be inventoried with the courts, and everyone gets to go down and see, and then you get to just kind of watch the fight for the assets. But the nice thing about a living trust is this is a private document. The transfer of assets goes without judicial oversight, unless there's a contest, and it also makes it a lot quicker, because you're not having to go to the court, look at your letters testamentary, do your affidavits, and do your distributions after a long period of time. All right, but here's the thing with the trust, though. You don't do it for you, really. You do it for your kids or your next of kin, because you're going to be dead or incapacitated. The money you spend and the administrative burden is really just to help the process on the back end. And for those of you that have had to administer a parent's estate or a loved one's estate, and a lot of my clients have come to me because they're in the process or right at the tail end, and they say, I don't want to do that to my family. I don't want to do that to my kids. We need to button this down now. And so if that's you, I think you can sympathize. All right, so let's talk then. We talked a little bit about wells, a little bit about living trust, but let's talk about whether a trust might be right for you, okay? Going in question, how large is your estate? Remember, estate is just the sum of all of your assets. How large is your estate? There's a gross estate calculation, but just pretend for simplicity to say everything you own. How large is it? Well, you may not need a living trust if you don't have more than $150,000. Adjusted for inflation, it's about $165,000 today in 2024. So if you have less than about $170,000, maybe you don't need a trust. You could have a will, it appoints your beneficiaries, and everything just kicks out. And it has to be less than $50,000 in real estate. So if you have less than $50,000 in California real estate, and you have less than $170,000 total, you can get it accomplished through a small estate affidavit, through a simple will. You can avoid probate. You could quickly get it to charities and kids and everything else you want to support. Okay, but that's not most people. What about this other, the 7 million number? All right, there's this ugly beast out there called the estate tax on the federal side. And so you probably have heard about it, death tax, estate tax. What it is, for a long, long time, well over 100 years, there's always been some level where the federal government says, if you die with more than X, you're gonna pay something out of your estate. Estate tax, pretty straightforward. But just like income, you know, you have federal and state income, right? On the states that charge income. Some states have income tax, some don't. You got the Alaskas and Nevadas and Texas, so the Floridas. And so the states that don't have income taxes, there are some states that impose a state estate tax, and then there's some that don't. And so surprisingly to most of my friends and neighbors, California, for all of our tax zealousness, we don't have estate tax. The only estate tax is on the federal side. Oregon and Washington have a state estate tax. They have really low exemption amounts. They're horrible places to die unless you do a lot of tax planning. And for whatever reason, California, and I get, of course, every day, I'm getting things across my desk, proposed legislation, and, you know, we've got a lot of Californians that are going to be dying in the next 15 years, and how does Sacramento get a, you know, piece of it? But right now, and historically, California does not have a state estate tax. We're worried about a federal estate tax, though. So I put that 7 million number up there because here's the deal. Right now, we have some breathing room. Most of you probably are not subject to the federal estate taxes. In 2018, under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that exemption amount went to over $10 million a person, adjusted for inflation, and sits at almost 13.61, so almost $14 million per person today, going to jump to over $14 million in 2025 next year. And they introduced what's called portability, which we used to have to do on the planning side, so that married couples can bundle. So that means if you're married in 2024, you've got over $27 million of exemption before you're subject to any estate taxes. That's awesome. But it sunsets, because like anything that's saving Americans a lot of money, when they passed it, they said, okay, fine, we're going to run this out, and on January 1st, 2026, we're right back to the pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act levels. And so that was $5.49 million before it jumped up, and so that was indexed to inflation, so most people expect it'll come down to about $7 million again per. So if that's you, then it's going to be in addition to a living trust, you're going to need to do some tax planning. And I'm always happy to talk about that, but come and see me or just circle with me afterward if you want to chat a little bit, okay? Again, real property. If you own real property, say you have a house in Kern County, maybe you have like most of my farming clients out here, they've got a condo in five cities somewhere, Arroyo Grande or Pismo, Shell Beach. And so you've got a couple pieces of property. If you end up passing with either a simple will or with no plan, every county where your property sits, you've got to go through limited probate action. And right now, Kern County is actually a little better than most, but you're still looking probably about 18 months before that can change hands. And under California law, when that last deed holder dies, most of your title, so if you own your house, you're a married couple, you own your house, it's likely titled joint tenancy with the right of survivorship. So great, surviving spouse has it after the death of the first of you. But at the death of the second, if you don't have something in place, like either a trust or some transfer on death provision, then the only person in the state of California under current law that can retitle it is a probate judge. So you're doing the formal probate process. And if nobody steps up, the court's going to have to appoint someone, all those costs are going to be eaten out of it, and it's going to be a long time before your family is actually getting title to that property. So if you own property, yeah, you probably want a living trust. Do you own a business interest? Yeah, some people have succession planning. A lot of trust will own the business to keep those going as well. Certainly out of state, there's a lot of trust reciprocal agreements, trust treaties between states, trust recognition statutes. And so a lot of my clients have properties in various western states, and you could actually do it with a valid California trust. Some people even leave California and go, and then they could do either an amendment or restatement to their documents and keep it going. All right? Do you have children from a prior relationship? Is there some other planning as well? Because oftentimes, too, if you were to, if you go through intestate succession, it's going all to surviving spouse. The surviving spouse outlives you, and you got the he and hers Brady bunch. May not go exactly the way you want. All right? So some things to think about. But trust is probably right for you. And again, I didn't say it on the front end. Shame on me. But I don't have a dog in the hunt. I haven't taken a new client in years. I'm not taking any new clients here. None of you are going to be my client. No one's going to get a bill. No one's going to see a bill. I'm not going to see a dollar from any of you. I'm just kind of going through on a high level. So when I'm encouraging you, this is just based on my experience, and I'm not up here, and then on the back table, go ahead and take it and you'll get $100 off for free. No, that's not me. I'm not taking clients. At the end of it, I'll always encourage you to go pair up with counsel, local counsel. If you don't know any, I'll try to give you a few names. Grant and I chatted. Maybe we could try to come up with a list of names you could set on the back end. But I'm not your guy, all right? I am so busy right now doing a lot of the ministry work and working with major donors to ministries and churches on complex gifts that I just, the Lord has blessed me with some resources. So I am not taking, I'm just hyper-focused on what I'm doing here, okay? So, trust may be right for you. All right. Now let's talk about gifts to your kids. Assuming you have some kids, maybe not, but family distribution. If you have some family, you want to leave gifts. All right, a number of you may be like 100% to church or charity, and I get to work with some of those folks. That's always fun to be a part of. But most folks are going to say, look, your knee-jerk position is you go in, you're going to leave to your kids either the entirety of the estate or the majority of the estate to your kiddos. But what does that look like? Maybe they're minors, maybe some are adults, maybe some are minors, maybe you have wildly disparate ages. Are you going to leave it outright in equal shares? That's a very common way. You don't know. Sometimes people think, well, I either try to do dollar amounts or try to identify specific assets. That's usually not best practice because we have no idea how much these assets are going to be worth. I have way too many clients that when they come to me, they've kind of got it set up and they're trying to do beneficiary designation. So this investment account's going to go here and my IRA is going to go here and the rental, the cabin up at Mammoth is going to go here. And it's like, okay, that's great, but do you know if these things are going to be in your inventory when you die? Are you going to have some some long-term health care costs at the end of life, some assisted living costs, where are you going to be pulling those from? Is it going to draw down an asset? So usually, when you're thinking about planning, think about kind of a total estate concept, how much you leave into the family, whether it's kids. If you don't have kids, maybe you want to leave some nephews, nieces, siblings, whatever you want to do. You can do an outright and equal shares. We're using percentages, though. We're not trying to identify assets. That's really best practice. And if they're minor, you really want to think about, okay, do I want to leave them to when my kids turn a specific age? A lot of folks historically have thought, okay, as soon as they turn 18, I'm going to go ahead and give them their assets. But who here thinks that 18 is an appropriate age to to give anyone significant resources? So maybe. I mean, I've had a number of clients, of course, hyper-responsible kids. My oldest daughter, I could probably leave her assets at 8. My youngest, absolutely not. We're going to do a tiered approach, and she's going to get last final distribution at 65. And so, you have these. So you have, he's a boy. I got two girls and a boy. And so he would just buy Nintendo. And so when you've got the especially when you're thinking about those preliminary considerations, age, financial responsibility, if you have three kids, say they're teenagers, say they're all walking with the Lord, you have no reason to doubt that there's going to be substance abuse issues. You're just going to get a lot of friends and go off to Vegas. Well, what we're thinking, well, if 18 is a little young, what does that look like? Maybe 21, maybe 25, maybe half at 20, half at 25, maybe allowances for some health, education, maintenance support, allow to pay some college. You can write all this in. It's your stuff. If you say on the front end, what happens to you? You could do this through will, you could do it through trust. You can say on the front end, what happens to my stuff? No, you get it at a certain light. You could put conditions on it so long as they're reasonable and don't conflict with probate code. You can put all kinds of crazy conditions on it. Most of them will fly. But as a rule, though, from what I've seen, and again, I'm not telling you what to do. It's your stuff and your kids. But usually, maybe a tiered approach tends to be pretty common. A certain percentage at a certain age, maybe 18, maybe 21, maybe 25, maybe whatever that looks like, and then the lump sum distribution at a certain age. But along the way, again, this is going to have to be held in trust, because even if you do this through a will, it creates a little bit of a trust because you've got to have somebody that's going to be managing money, investing it, and making those distributions along the way. So that can be the guardian of the kids, or it could be somebody else, it could be an individual, it could be a bank. But all of those decisions, you could usually, you're going to say, well, yeah, you could allow for a down payment on a home, maybe a certain amount to start a business for if it's approved by my trustee or whoever's watching. Maybe it's for college expense, whatever. So you can say if you have some healthcare cost, you can pay it out of your distribution. But do you want it to create a set? No, so that's great. But then you're thinking, okay, well, do we want to give it to them as they turn the age that we've set? Or do we want to give it to them when the youngest turns the age that we've set? And so you kind of have to think about that. Mine are close in age. Mine are all 2 years apart to the month. Within 2 weeks they all turn. So all summer birthdays, I don't have to think about grades. If I know one day, I'm a planner. God was good to me. It was very intentional. And so they're all children of blessing from the Lord, and this was a real blessing because I don't like one less thing to administer. But if you're thinking, well, if you're close in age, maybe we just wait till the youngest. If we're doing a rolling distribution, and then depending on market performance and asset levels and what they're getting out of your portfolio, one may get a windfall, one could end up getting a little bit short. So do you want to wait for the youngest to turn a certain age, or certain do distributions based on the youngest age, or do distribution based on theirs? The advantage of doing it in separate shares is that you don't have to have the oldest wait for the youngest to turn an age. The advantage of doing it in a group is that you don't have disparate amounts of distribution. So everybody gets the same thing. So something to think about. There's really no right answers here, but I'm really trying to get you primed too, because whether you have a plan in place and you're looking, we didn't do that when we went through the first time, we didn't really talk about it because our lawyer was flat fee and he was, my next appointment sitting out in the waiting room and so we're just trying to press through. But, going in armed with some of these, just thinking about these things hopefully will help out. And then, of course, in trust for a lifetime based on special circumstances. We have some kids, maybe not walking with the Lord. We got some substance abuse issues. Maybe we got a special needs. Maybe you've got a grandkid, great-grandkid. Congrats that you're thinking about providing for. Was it great-grandkid today? Was that today?
Last week.
Last week. Okay, congrats. Okay, and like I said, they apply to both wills and trust. All right. So, yeah, pardon the image. This is kind of, again, I'm in Death and Taxes, and I know that's probably not the most uplifting slide, but I also, most of my clients are at some level of cognitive decline. I mean, it's just a reality. And I've seen it in particular over the last 4 years. And I don't know if it's just from being homebound or some crazy effect of China virus, but Americans are fading fast, especially the senior saints. And so we've got a lot of incapacity planning to think about. And the other documents, in addition to the will and the trust, these standalone documents are going to be durable powers of attorney. So like trusts, when people say powers of attorney, oh, that's a term you hear a lot. Oh, I got a trust. Oh, I got a power of attorney. These are huge blanket terms. I've got hundreds of powers of attorney templated that I'll draft. In loco parentis, to watch my kids when I'm on vacation. Oh, to enroll in school and help. I've got ones for operate a motor vehicle and to file my taxes and to operate a business. But what are we talking about? We're talking about durable powers of attorney. A power of attorney just gives somebody the authority to act on your behalf. Say again, a power of attorney just gives somebody the authority to act on your behalf. Plain and simple, that person's called the attorney in fact, because when somebody comes to me as a retainer, I can act on their behalf under law. When somebody gives you that same power under a power of attorney, congrats, and now you have the authority to act on their behalf. So that incapacity planning are going to be durable powers of attorney, and there's not that many of those. Most people, when they say power of attorney or general power of attorney, they're talking about these durable powers of attorney, because durable powers of attorney outlive your incapacity. If I do a typical power of attorney, for those of you with kids at home, and you come to me, it's like, we're going to Kauai for our anniversary, we're going to leave the kids with some friends, we want to be able to get them in and out of hospitals, in and out of daycare, whatever we need, okay, great, we'll do in a loco parentis power of attorney. But if something happens to you, and you're incapacitated, then the powers under that appointment cease. There's a couple durable powers of attorney that are prepared by counsel that will outlast your incapacity. So generally, they go in a lot of different names, especially on the health side. One's going to be for finances, one's going to be for health. Okay? And so usually we don't need him. Our senior saints need him, my senior clients need him, but you never know. You know, you could be that guy on the gurney. All right, so the financial, just like it says, name somebody to act on your behalf. If you're laid out, you're incapacitated, you're in a memory care unit, somebody's still got to pay for, keep the lights on. Somebody's still got to file your taxes. Somebody's still got to, take and be able to make distributions to your medical treatment facilities out of your checking account or whatever other source of income you designate. All right, so all of those things are going to be under that financial. The healthcare power of attorney is just like it sounds. It gives somebody authority to make health decisions for you. Now, there's a couple in California. Actually, California, for all we do wrong, they actually did it right, because other states, they kind of break this up. They've got a power of attorney for health, and then they've got an advanced medical directive or physician's directive or notice of, they've got they call it a living will, which is not to be confused with the living trust. But what they're really talking about is end of life decisions. So on the healthcare side, you've got, you may or may not recover. You may or may, or as you're going through the healthcare, treatment facilities around, somebody's making decisions, someone's paying bills. But when you actually get to the end of life and the docs are asking, okay, who's got that? That's actually going to be included in California typically on the same document. All right, so if you see it, often it'll be called a healthcare directive or healthcare. They go under a lot of different names, but for me, just remember, when you see these, we're talking about these durable powers of attorney, going to outlast your incapacity. The general durable, if you see that, that's just your financial power of attorney, so your finances. And then if you see advanced medical directive, physician's directive, healthcare power, these are just going to be on your health side, okay, giving somebody authority. So that's in addition to the others. All right, so a couple things when we're talking about the planning process as well, way down in the weeds, and this is this is the last slide before break. So just bear with me for just a couple minutes, because I think this is a fairly important slide. Not because of this graphic. Sorry about the graphic. That was me that I drew for a client, and I thought, I don't really have anything. I don't have any resource. Nobody's put together one that I like any better, so I scanned it, and I'll try to walk through it. But it's a bit of I understand it's cluttery. Just bear with me. If one or two of you here benefit from it, it'll be worth my while. So one of the people, when we think about our will, we think about our trust, we're thinking about our beneficiaries, the people who are getting gifts out of our estate, gifts out of our retirement plans, our life insurance beneficiaries. But the But who are the people that are going to make this happen? The people in your plan are often so important, and often that's a little bit of a weak link. Limiting factor. I mean, I've got people, you know where you want your stuff to go. Half to family, half to Grace Bible Baker. So whatever you want to do, whatever the Lord leads you to do prayerfully, but who's going to do that? Who's going to administer your estate? You can imagine how many clients have come to me over the years, and they had somebody written, it was their parents when they were young, and they're going to take care of their estate and watch their kids. And now then the years go on, and now their parents have, predeceased them. Now they're looking at siblings or doing things. And then they come to me when they're in their 70s or 80s, and now their siblings have, either passed on, or maybe they've got some health challenges, so now they've aged out. And now what do I do? And maybe you've got a kid, maybe the kids aren't a good fit. Maybe you don't want to burden your kids with those responsibilities. But you got to think about these things. So whether it's a will or a living trust, somebody has to administer your estate. A lot of the terms, you may already be familiar with a lot of these terms, but you'll hear them thrown about so much. Executor, executrix, successor trustee, etc., testator. What does all that mean? Well, it's really you're talking about, whether you're talking about a successor trustee or executor, executrix is a feminine version, on that first bullet point, what we're really talking about is administration. Simple as a successor trustee is if you have a living trust, the assets controlled by that trust are going to be administered by your successor trustee. Because if you create a living trust, you're the trustee of your trust. You create it, you appoint yourself to administer it, and then upon your incapacity or death, you pass that responsibility on to somebody else. That person or entity is called your successor trustee. If you have a will and you're doing all your planning through a will, then that person is going to be your executor, executrix. All right, so that's pretty straightforward, but somebody's got to serve that role. So who's it going to be? Individual? Maybe. Maybe you don't have anyone. I mean, I've had a lot of surviving spouses. A lot of people never married, no kids. I got no one. What do I do? Well, usually your best recourse is going to be some sort of a corporate trustee. And I've got people with big families, lots of great options, but they still want to do a corporate trustee because they want to reduce the infighting in their kids. No right answer here. I'm not up here recommending one over the other, but you can use an individual. They don't have to be a California resident. Just have to be age of majority. And not lack capacity, or you can use a corporate trustee. What does that corporate trustee look like? Well, that could be a few different flavors. Your local bank and trust, right? Over on that Montecito Bank and Trust, Mechanics Bank, Wells Fargo Bank, has a trust department. It could be a national bank with a trust department. It could be a regional bank. They'll serve as your successor trustee. Typically, won't serve as executor of your will, but they'll come up. You ask them to be your successor trustee. They'll come out with the rate on the front end, and we'll do it. So there's some pros and cons. It's all done in-house. All the investment, your tax filings. We have a 1040 income tax. When you die, you have a 1041 estate tax filing with the IRS. You have a 706 estate tax filing as well for your death taxes. You've got income and death. You may have a 709 exclusion amount. So all of these things are done in-house by your bank and trust. Or another corporate trustee is going to be these professional fiduciaries. You may have seen these guys around. They're actually legit. I mean, you get a lot of mailings from time to time, or used to anyway. No one's taking new clients anymore because there's not enough of us to go around. But remember years ago when you'd always get mailings to go get a trust, or you'd get these fiduciaries that'll sit there and try to advertise their services. There has been, since about 2015, almost 10 years now, they've had a Professional Fiduciaries Association of California. And these are people that are actually licensed and bonded, do some minimum training, to go and administer your estate. And for my clients, my widows or single, never married, that need somebody in their life to take care of some health care decisions and finances, those durable powers of attorney, those professional fiduciaries can do that as well. So it's not just the administration. Okay, so that's on that second corporate trustee option. All right, but if you have an individual, that could be a really good option too. So default is typically, I'm going to take my oldest boy. Great. But if you have a cantankerous younger kid who's going to be coming at him, where's my stuff? Where's my distribution? Where's the trust accounting? Where's my stuff? That's an inequitable distribution. You're playing referee over the tangible personal property now, huh? How come you kept the family Bible? No, mom promised my wife the jewels. Or usually it's not even a sibling, it's someone the sibling married. Because your kids are angels. but they married somebody who may be a little greedy. And so then they're going to come in. And so there's a saying in estate planning. So my colleagues and I, we talk about it. It's the strongest, there's a rule of the strongest and the fastest. I mean, you know, most people can't anticipate how their kids are going to act or something happens to your family are going to act. But once you die, you can imagine when you breathe your last, someone's coming in, and you know you'll have your siblings. You're always going to have. You could almost picture your kids. You're going to have the one or two or three that are just going to sit back. And, hey, I'm going to go along, get along. We're not going to rock the boat. You guys just take whatever you want. You know, but let's do it. And then you're going to have one that just wants to get in there. And oh boy, you know, before the coroner's office shows up, they're already running out with boxes of stuff. Not every family, but I do see that. So the strongest and the fastest are often rewarded. And so one of the things you can do to avoid that is maybe appoint a corporate trustee who's going to come in, lock everything down, and then instead of kids getting angry at each other, they can get angry at the trust officer or your local bank and trust. So it's an option, and it depends on your family, your season to taste. Okay. So let me do this final point. We'll take a quick break. The typical trust package is going to be, now this is bare bones. Okay, so if you're like, you know, Travis, I've got a house. I feel like I should probably do this living trust. I don't like the idea of this probate. It sounds long. I want to avoid the courts. Okay, well, that's great. Well, here's what it looks like. You're going to have, if you're married, you're going to have your joint revocable trust. Okay, the numbers in parentheses afterward, that's just a number of documents. You're going to share. They got one of those. But then you're going to have pour over wills. Okay, so when you get a package, you're going to see these wills. And you're like, wait a sec, I thought I got a trust. How come I'm seeing wills in this binder that I got from my attorney as well? Well, because you need pour-over wills. Because any assets that aren't funded into your trust aren't administered through your trust. It's called an unfunded trust. And unfortunately, it happens way too often. So imagine this. You come to my office, and different lawyers do it differently. And I say, hey, look, I can do a basic trust package for you. I mean, years ago, I never did this because I like to be a little more full service. But a lot of my colleagues would say, hey, look, I could come in for a couple $1,000, you know, do a nice trust package, but then the funding's on you. So what does that mean? I'll come in, let's talk about who you want your stuff to go to, draft up the documents, bring in the notary, I get you signed and out, and I give you instructions on how to fund your trust. Well, the majority of people don't, because like, oh, they walk out of their lawyer's office, boy, I'm glad we got that taken care of. And I said, oh, remember, if you don't put assets into your trust, then there's nothing that's actually funded into it. So my little graphic here, that middle thing is supposed to be a basket. So I don't know, I'm a lawyer, not an artist. And so that RLT, that's a revocable living trust. Okay, think about it. If you know, there's a lot of ways to think about it. I tend to think of it as a basket that holds assets. It's a document, but it's creating this legal basket. And it's going to distribute. So on the bottom left, you've got kids or individuals. Bottom right, you've got church ministry. It's going to distribute to these beneficiaries, right? But it's only going to distribute what you put into that basket. And if you don't put anything into that basket, oh, it could be a beautiful living trust. I could draft you something and bring a tear to your eye. But if you don't take the time to fund it, then it's not going to do anything for you. So everything's going through probate anyway. Or if after the time you lose capacity and you buy a house, you have an asset, or you keep an individual capacity, you get an inheritance before at the end, and you don't get a chance to move some of those assets into the trust, you get it's going to be governed by wills, it's going to be governed by probate, and those are called pour-over wills. So the pour-over wills are going to name the trust your beneficiary of everything. So your package then is going to be that one living trust you're going to fund, and then during your life, then it's going to have pour-over wills as a safety net. So that anything that you fail to fund into your trust or anything that you acquire after the funding of your trust that you don't put into it will then be directed. So one for husband, one for wife into the trust. You're also going to have then four powers of attorney, because those powers of attorney for health and finance, those are individual as well. So you each do a couple of those. So you walk out, you've got your husband-wife wills, you've got husband-wife powers of attorney, and you're sharing one joint trust. And that is the most basic package recommended if you own any real property in California. And then beyond that, yeah, you can go crazy with a lot of tax planning provisions and such. But at a minimum, I'd recommend this for 90% of Californians. And if it works for you, let's take a quick break, and I'll just make myself available. And if I fail to say it on the front end, I'll stick around as long as need be afterward as too for questions, all right? All right, and we'll come back with part two that gets me excited about some tax efficient, some tips and tricks for charitable giving.